Now, NDE Radio, a weekly exploration of near-death experiences and similar encounters with the other side. Now, here's your host, Lee Whitting.
Welcome to NDE Radio with Lee Whitting, whether you're listening on TalkZone, by podcast, through the archives of our ad-free shows on our YouTube channel, or by connecting through our Facebook page. These days, there's clearly a growing interest and belief in the presence of aliens among us. In olden times, of course, any encounters with aliens left folks believing that such beings were primarily spiritual, either angels from heaven or fallen angels. In traditional Christianity, angels are messengers, the good ones coming from God, while the fallen ones had been seduced by Satan. Also traditionally, humankind has been considered fallen itself, also seduced by Satan, so that humans bore an original sin that must be accounted for and healed by renewed faith and by acting with love to God and one another. But if God is love, couldn't fallen angels ultimately get a shot at redemption as well as us? And if so, how closely are we humans related in spirit to the fallen angels, even those whom today some label as aliens? Now, granted, the Bible declares in Hebrews 2 and also in Psalm 8, "What is mankind that you, God, are mindful of them? Human beings, that you care for them, you have made them a little lower than the angels." But the phrase "a little lower" sounds to me like locational, that the intended home bases for angels and humans were not the same. Heaven and earth were just dimensionally different, with earth being a little lower. This was not necessarily a spiritual difference, but a locational one. So could it be that all of us who fell to earth, at least spiritually speaking, are related or even one and the same? Well, back in 2015, Dennis Hamrick came on the show to explain why he believed fallen angels are brothers to humans, and like us, striving to redeem their standing in God's eyes through acts of faith and love on earth. Dennis's first clue to this relationship came from a passage from Revelation 19:10, which reads, "At this, I fell at the angel's feet to worship him. But he said to me, 'Don't do that. I am a fellow servant with you and with your brothers and sisters who hold to the testimony of Jesus. Worship God, for it is the spirit of prophecy who bears testimony to Jesus.'" Well, Dennis is certainly not the first to look at this relationship of human and fallen angel. For example, 3rd century church father Origen of Alexandria speculated on it as well. So as NDEers look more closely at the growing reports of aliens slash angels among us, it does seem possible their spiritual nature is very possibly akin to, or even one and the same with ours. With that in mind, I thought it would be interesting to hear once again Dennis Hamrick's understanding of the angelic relationship he believes we share.
Dennis, I wonder if you could start by telling us about your early studies in Judaism.
Well, I started off as a Christian. I was raised in the Episcopal Church. And about halfway through my teens, I began questioning the messiahship of Jesus Christ. I believed in God, but I had a lot of serious questions as to why. Why was God making little people, souls, whatever, like on some kind of an assembly line with some kind of quality control at the end, that if this one doesn't meet the quality, it gets thrown away. If this one meets the quality, it goes on. It just didn't make sense to me that a God would be doing that and then send a guy down and to say, "Hey, here's some information. This will do it for you. This will get you in." And so I began looking more at what God was and what God's the reasoning for the commandments in the Old Testament, what the purpose was. And eventually I even grew away from that and grew more into the New Age movement. And I was into very many things for about 30 years.
Did you ever look at that time, did you ever look into Kabbalah, mystical Judaism?
I did at one point.
And what were your experiences in spiritualism?
Well, I was a healer in the Harrison D. Barrett Spiritualist Church, which is here in Bangor now. It used to be down in Etna, Maine. Mm-hmm. And during that time, I attended classes where we would meditate and try to communicate with those who had passed beyond and pass that information on to others in the group or others in the church.
And what sort of experiences did you have?
I've had a number of experiences with it. I've only had a few that I could definitely say were, to me, unquestionable. I mean, the information would come and I would pass it on, and it may or may not have been significant to the person I passed it on. But at least one time, I not only was able to accurately describe the person, but I actually received a name for the person, a full name, not an initial, and the name matched the person that I was describing to the person that I was describing it to.
And so did you ever see a spirit?
Well, at that time, that's what I was seeing. I was looking at this person sitting in the chair, and when I was looking, somebody else was sitting there, and I described the person that I saw sitting where they were. It was kind of like an overlay. I mean, not like that person was gone and this person was there. The other person was still in the chair, but when I looked, they looked like somebody else.
Hmm. Since you had such, I guess you'd call it convincing evidence that something was going on there, what drew you back into Christianity?
Well, after 30 years in the New Age movement, I found that I was still looking. And I was finding lots of things. I was experiencing lots of things. But I wasn't reaching any kind of point of satisfaction. And something just told me to go back and take another look at the Bible. So I did. Uh-huh. I sat down. When I read the Bible this time, I found that a lot of the things that I had actually argued against the Bible in the past made sense to me. I still always had that question about, you know, what is the purpose of this? Why are we making these things? Either throw them away or reward them at the end. And that kind of led to where the subject that we're heading for today. At one point, I began delving very strongly. I spent about a month studying just the book of Revelation. And that was where I had something that was totally, I could not question it. I can't prove it to anybody else, but it's absolutely proven to me, and I can explain what happened there.
Okay.
Probably the best thing, though, the best way to introduce it is probably the way I was told to introduce it, which was with the a parable that I received. And then going back and filling in the blanks of how that parable came about might be a better way to go about it.
Okay.
So this was in August of 2009, I believe. I was sitting in, I just finished reading chapter 19. Well, I was reading chapter 19 of Revelation, and I had just finished reading Revelation 19:10. And suddenly all of the room had like a haze over it, and I was looking, like recalling a memory, that kind of picturing in your mind. And it was as if picturing a piece of paper, and some things happened with that. And but the next day I was I received this explanation of it. And the parable begins. An extremely wealthy man who owned a great business empire which extended throughout the world had 12 sons who would one day share in their father's vast empire. The firstborn believed that he should inherit the greater part of his father's empire and resented that he should one day have to share with his brothers, and devised a scheme to remove his father as head of the empire and take over himself. He began to create dissension among his brothers and convinced three of his brothers that they should join him, and together they schemed to remove their father as head of the empire and force their brothers to work for them. The father learned of their plans, and before they could carry them out, the father had the four sons forced from his properties and forbidden to return. The exiled brothers tried to set up their own business, but found that working with their older brother was not rewarding to anyone but him. The three younger brothers secretly contacted their father, asking that they be allowed to return and become part of their father's empire once again. The father was distressed, and he questioned his son's motives to return, for they gave him no reason to believe that their character was such now that they had truly repented and would not try again to take control of the father's empire. He loved all of his sons and thus devised a test to determine his son's true motives. The father proposed, and the sons agreed, that the sons would work for the father and the other brothers as laborers on an island resort he owned, without the father revealing his true plan, that if the sons proved their loyalty to the father in an environment in which the father had established several simple rules by which to abide to ensure the safety of all involved, the father informed the oldest son of his plan. The oldest son agreed willingly to not inform his brothers of the father's plan in exchange for the opportunity to indirectly create rebellion in his brothers to their father, for he knew that if at the end of a time known only to the father rejected any of the brothers, they would then be forced to return to him permanently.
Okay, so this cast of characters, as I take it, is the father is God. The oldest son is Satan, is that right?
Yes. The sons are angels.
Right. And the oldest son is one that is holding out right to the end against God.
That is my understanding.
Okay. Well, actually, why don't you explain the story?
Right. The day before this happened, I just finished reading Revelation 19, 10. And that verse, along with 19:9, just to refresh it, says, "And he saith unto me, Write, blessed are they which are called unto the marriage supper of the Lamb. And he saith unto me, These are the true sayings of God." And then 19:10 says, "And I fell at his feet to worship him. And he said unto me, See thou do it not. I am thy fellow servant, and thy brethren that have the testimony of Jesus. Worship God, for the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy." And it was at that moment. I'm sorry?
No, I was going to say, so that is an angel telling John that they're one and the same, that they're brothers.
Well, I didn't think that when I started reading it. But after, at that moment, as soon as I finished reading it, as I said, like things got kind of gray. And it was like I wasn't really focused on anything in the room. But what I was picturing was similar to a piece of paper just laying there, nothing else but a piece of paper floating in blackness. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure this is just an image, but it explained things later. The piece of paper was full of colors flowing through it, mixed like millions, billions, little bits of color just floating like a TV screen when it has the snow on it.
Yes.
It was kind of similar to that type of an effect. And I was aware that all of this movement was things moving, beings moving. And suddenly they began to shift, and it divided into, began flowing to the left or flowing to the right. And at the end of the flowing, it had created a situation where, like, if the paper had been letter folded, there were two-thirds of the paper was on one side and one-third was on the other side. And at that moment, with the ends remaining attached, the one-third began to separate from the two-thirds, forming a circle in between, or just pulling apart, stretching out. And the inside of that was black, but the interesting thing was when it separated, the one-third went black. What that was, it was separating from God. Without God, there was no light. And the beings that had gone to that one-third began to question, what are we doing here? This isn't what we expected. We don't want to be like this. We want to go back. And so that was communicated somehow across the abyss. And suddenly, inside, right in the very center of this, was an explosion. And the universe was formed. It was the Big Bang happening right there. So this is not saying the Big Bang never happened. It's kind of said, all right, here's why it happened. And as that exploded, it went out, and I was aware that this was the opportunity We're not here trying to prove to God that, hey, you made us and we're good enough to do this and you can put us in hell and you can punish us and make all these bad things happen to us. This is what we have to go through to get back there. We already made the decision to go to hell. We're already on our way there. This is our opportunity not to go to hell. This is our opportunity to go back to God. So if we don't make it, it isn't because he made it so we couldn't make it. It's because we chose not to make it. And all of a sudden, there it was.
It's an interesting alternative explanation for original sin.
Yes. Yes, it is. Exactly. And there was one other thing. At the end of this, a voice said to me, tell them. And I'm kind of freaked out because I'm thinking I don't want to be the one telling people this. They'll think I'm nuts. And who knows? But so this was on my mind heavily. And later on, I was in the bathroom, and I was standing in front of the bathroom mirror, and I looked at the mirror, and there was a fly flying around, and looking for some kind of sign. I said, "All right, God, if you want me to tell people this, make that fly land on my hand. And let me walk, open the door, walk out of the bathroom, go down the stairs, out the front door, and when I get onto the front porch, make the fly fly away. And I won't do anything. I won't shake my hand. I won't do anything different. I'll just be normal." Nothing happened. I'm thinking, oh, good. And so I just went on. But, I mean, it was very, I couldn't stop thinking about this. And the next day, I was standing in exactly the same spot in the bathroom. And that's when the parable came to me. And then as soon as that was done, I held up my hand. I went, God, you want me to tell people this? And out of nowhere, the fly came up and landed on my hand. I didn't even know it was still there. But then right next to it, a fruit fly came up and landed. And then I'm having like chills running up and down my spine. I'm thinking, oh, all right, this is weird. I went out, just like I said, walked down the stairs, opened the front door, stepped onto the porch. The second my foot touched the porch, both of them took off. So I went upstairs and I wrote down the parable, and pretty much I've told a few people about it here and there, and they all gave me different explanations of, Dan, this may be something just for you. It may not be something for the world. But it's been on my mind now for all these years, and I've brought it up at the church several times and explained it to people, and some people got mad at me, swearing, no, I'm not a fallen angel, and very resented it. And so I don't know that we all are fallen angels. Some of us may be here to purposely try to keep people from passing through successfully. Some of us may be here to help them. But I have at this point, and it's exactly the problems of Satan. It all has to do with, we thought we were better than God, or we thought we could be God, and then I realized that's what I was doing in the New Age movement. I had bought into that. And so it just completely changed the way that I looked at things. And I began the Bible dipping, and I began finding all these verses where there's talking about measurements in the Bible, and it says, for that is the measurement of an angel. I think it's explaining what a cubit is, and then the measurement of a man. And there's a part where Jesus talks about how you are of your father, who was a liar from the start, and I am of my father. And just so many references where there are in the Bible where there are clues that we are the angels, or we are angels, or we are of Satan.
When I'm in the hospital and someone has died, family members often will tell me that, my dad is an angel now. And when they say that, that's not traditional Christian thinking. But I always think of you because not only is your dad an angel now, but your dad was an angel as well when he was on Earth.
Well, here's an interesting phrase to ponder in this. There's in 1 Corinthians 6:3, know ye not that we shall judge angels? How much more things that pertain to this life? why would we be judging angels? Are there angels up in heaven sinning? That they would need us to come and judge them? Or are we judging as we add those who come through here on what is called the final judgment day, which this didn't give me things. It didn't say, oh, yes, Jesus is the Messiah. It didn't say, oh, yes, the Bible is true. But it pretty much just explained how it worked and what it was all about.
Given the state of the world, do you think any of us angels are making it back into the light?
Oh, I would say so. But I think the Bible warns us in itself that there's a wide path and there's a narrow path. Yeah. And many could well be on the wide path, which does not lead where they want to go.
Right. Now, the Bible indicates that there were a limited number of angels at the creation. And so what is your take on reincarnation? Are we angels going through many lifetimes to earn our way back to heaven?
I that was not part of the indication. Reincarnation is something that I had looked into very much. But I also see it as a possibility that it could be whoever these forces are that are trying to keep us from getting there, distracting us from our true intent. And perhaps it's what you do with it. I mean, if you just believe in reincarnation or don't believe in reincarnation, that may or may not be something. If you see it as an attempt to reach a certain goal in life and you're following that goal, that may fall perfectly into place. As I said, there wasn't an indication that, I didn't see Jesus standing there directing things, it was just an awareness and a memory of this creation happening.
So if new souls being born into the world, new babies being born into the world are angels, and there were no reincarnation, then they would be getting their shot for the first time.
Or they may be playing a role that it is not that their death has to do with this passage, but they may have been a force that came into the world to help others learn a lesson. For example, who sinned when Jesus cured the blind man? What caused him to be blind? His parents or him? And they even asked, was it him before he was born, or was it his parents? And Jesus said it wasn't anything. It was so that he could be used for the glory of God.
Right. And that has been taken as a reference to reincarnation. Was this, in fact, that's what Scientology is based on. The problems in this life, they say, are the accumulated karma from past lives, and that's what they claim to be able to make clear. But that is true. And Jesus, of course, just said, well, he was blind so that the Father could be glorified in this story. And since that story has lived on for 2,000 years, I guess that he was right about that.
Yep, so far so good.
I looked up what Origen had to say about angels, because I had always heard that he felt that we were fallen angels. And what he was talking about beings called logica, which are that were created and which were originally created in close proximity to God with the intention that they should explore the divine mysteries in a state of endless contemplation. But they grew weary of this intense contemplation and lapsed, falling away from God into an existence on their own terms. And it was also a misuse of God's gift of free will, I guess. And it does sound like the story of the angels, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
And, it is something to ponder, but now when I look at things and I think, why do people act like this? Why do people treat each other like this? And I put it into this context, it just seems to fall into place so easily and gives me an understanding of atheists I mean, these are famous atheistic questions. If God's so good, then why does he cause so much evil? Or let's say so many bad things happen to good people. And it's, well, maybe he's not letting it happen. Maybe it's just happening, and they knew it was going to happen when they were decided to come here. Or there was a possibility it could happen. Hmm. And that was what they chose to do in order to prove their loyalty to God. And then when they get here, maybe the whatever it was that got them drawn out of heaven is so overpowering to them that they just can't overcome it, even though they're being told, hey, don't do this.
The state of things seems to be in decline. Do you see the prophecies in the Bible in Revelation about an end times fitting into this notion of fallen angels?
Well, yes, in that one of the one time, and you can, as I say, any of this you can put onto it what you want, or just say it's bull. But when I was asking questions, I would open the Bible and would open it to a page, to a possible answer to the question. And one time when I said, why isn't this in the Bible? I was led to the verse of about the seven winds, seven thunders, I'm sorry. And he was about to write it down, and he said, no, don't write that down. Seal it up, and there's a point. And at the end of that, that was a Revelation 10:4. And then there's several verses. There's about the book, take it, eat it up. In thy belly it's bitter, or it'll be sweet when you eat it, but in your belly it was bitter. And then the next verse says, and he said to me, thou must prophesy again before many people and nations and tongues and kings. So somewhere he was telling John in there that he's going to have to prophesy again. And when I said, well, why now? Why is this, why would this be coming now? And when I opened it to the first, and it said, the end is near. And so I would see these things, and I would just kind of shudder a little bit and close the Bible and come back the next day and maybe do the same thing again. But one of the answers had to do with John chapter 8:20 going on. And that's where he talks about, you do the deeds of your father. And we're not born of fornication. We have one father, even God. And Jesus said, if God were your father, you would love me. For I proceeded forth and came from God. Neither came I of myself, but he sent me. And why do you not understand my speech? Because you cannot hear my word. Ye of your father, the devil, and the lust of your father, you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in truth, because there is not truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. And, it goes on from there, but basically, it sounded like he was telling them the reason you can't hear me or you can't follow me is you're not letting go of your father, the devil.
Now, in your parable that you received, there's this agreement between God and Satan. It's sort of a working arrangement. Does this imply that in the end, even Satan would be pardoned?
I did not get the impression that the older brother had any desire to be. And it's not in the Bible, but it's better to rule in hell than to serve in heaven, comes to mind. And that seemed to be Satan's M.O. So I don't know that, but I imagine the opportunity is there if he would choose to take it.
Yeah. Well, like the play we're doing about Judas, it's Judas's own anger and sense of failure and self-contempt that keeps him from being pardoned by God, who loves him.
He doesn't want to be.
He doesn't want to be. Origen's take on Jesus was that Jesus was created with the angels and was the only one who did not fall. What do you see, Jesus as an angel, or do you see Jesus as a third part of God?
I saw it, I guess, as a part of God, because I didn't see it as separate. in the vision, and I didn't. It didn't come across in the story as anything separate. I mean, I didn't see this as any kind of proof or not proof of Jesus. This was just a demonstration to me. It may have been just to answer the question of that I'd always asked: why?
Yeah.
Why would you make people just to knowing that you're going, and that you're not just going to get rid of them at the end, but you're going to punish them for eternity?
Right.
And that kind of gave me the idea that they couldn't be destroyed, or that maybe they couldn't be created beyond where they had been once they had been created. And so this was a total math, and it's trying to make the total work either within the realm of God or within a realm of God and a realm of no God. Your choice.
It may seem a stretch to listeners that aliens or angels are humans in their spiritual essence, and yet the oneness implied by universal consciousness does suggest that God's love is the basic building block of all creation, and that means all of us. Just something more to think about, my friends. If you'd like to hear this show again or any of our more than 500 archived, ad-free NDE interviews, go to TalkZone's NDE Radio site and hit the Past Shows button, or go to our YouTube channel, NDE Radio with Lee Whitting, where you can subscribe to and comment on the complete NDE Radio library. And listen next Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern at TalkZone for more NDE Radio. I'm your host, Lee Whitting, saying once again, thanks for listening.